Today on the podcast, we're talking about all things AI as a founder. That's why you should think about disrupting your existing systems using AI, how to use it most effectively to manage your time, whether there's any opportunities for you to expand into AI and to create new products, what's the best way of going about this, and so much more. We've got our expert here with us today, Pete Senna, who's a good friend and a demand designer. He's the founder of Digital Surgeons, which he created back in 2004, with just $5,000 and transforming into an eight-figure business with over 50 employees. Pete is forward obsessed and is also a venture mentor at Yale University and an entrepreneur in residence at the University of Connecticut. So Pete, so many people who talk about AI at the moment, right, on LinkedIn, often they haven't built business before, they're kind of jumping on different trends. Whereas you've already had successful businesses, you've already done so much. And what made you get interested in AI, right? Because a lot of people in your position might just be like, I'm doing well what I'm doing, I don't need to look at that. So what attracted you to it?
It was kind of like when digital cameras came out and Kodak was like, yeah, you know, we don't got to worry about that. No one's ever going to do like a high quality photograph on digital cameras. You know, film is forever. And then, you know, we saw what happened there. And then when we started getting, you know, smartphones and touchscreen phones, no one's ever going to replace a camera with a cell phone. The quality will never be there. And then, you know, the question I ask you or to ask people is, well, when was the last time you saw somebody walking around with a camera for fun? That's not like a professional photographer, right? The quality of these things is getting so fast. So there's not a lot of times in the world where things come out that are completely transformative and shift the paradigm. The internet was one of them. E-commerce was another one. Obviously, Industrial Revolution, all the kind of older stuff that we all know about. But I think AI absolutely is going to be that big paradigm shift. And what I mean specifically is not just large language models, which is, you know, we think about tools like ChatGPT or Claude and that sort of large language model movement that's happened in the past, let's call it 18 months just to give it a thing. You know, AI is all around us. It's sort of like the placeholder term. You know, when you take a blurry photo on your iPhone and it fixes it, that's AI, right? We've got, you know, things that are using AI or some version of that. And you and I both know this as engineers ourselves. So to answer your question, I think when I think about business, I think about systems and machines that scale, right? Because the one thing that doesn't scale in most businesses is people, right? It's why service companies, which I've built a lot of service companies, don't often scale. It's the systems, right? Because, you know, people are your greatest asset. So I think that why I've put so much energy and emphasis into these technologies is that I fundamentally believe that they've already changed the world. And they're only going to get better at changing business. So I think that the way I look at it is like, let's not go through it through the I'm already doing things good tactic, but rather how can I do things that much better? So that's where I would start. But as for how these underlying technologies are just completely untapped centers of like growth is what I'd love to talk to you more about.
And what I've been really interesting too is that sometimes people are like, oh, I've got to start an AI company now, right? That's the way to win it. Whereas the tactic you're taking is actually, how can you use the AI to make what you're doing and your process better? So it's a lot of people out there, they're not going to start an AI company necessarily, right? They might not have the experience or the know-how to like, code the AI and like create a company in that way. But those founders could leverage AI to make them a better founder. And what were some of the first things you explored there? Like what was the first step you took in thinking, how can this help me?
Yeah. So I want to just kind of hop us on a time machine for a second, even though we're not going to go that far back in time. But like, if you think about GPT, right, you know, generative pre-trained transformer, right? The pre-trained part is really important for us to think about, right? So I remember with GPT-2, it was basically like, you know, autocorrect on steroids, you know, it was just sort of spitting out different words. You know, when GPT-3 came out and 3.5 Turbo, it started getting really interesting because now you had like a knowledge engine and a reasoning engine in one, and just what was possible in that simple interface was incredible, right? Now you move on to GPT-4 And now the multimodal capability of GPT-4, specifically with GPT-4 vision, meaning you can take a photo of something and upload it. You can, you know, attach an audio file or attach code or a spreadsheet. Now you're getting into an entirely new paradigm. And what I mean by paradigm is, yeah, I could have, I'm an engineer. I could have started an AI company, but I would have no business starting an AI company, because the reality is I would be kind of like this meme that's going around the internet, which is the Scooby-Doo meme, which is where it's like, you know, you're starting an AI company. It's like, boom, you're revealed. You're just making API calls to GPT-4, right? OpenAI. So I think what's interesting is a lot of these AI companies that sort of went to the gold rush, most of them are already dead. And the ones that aren't already dead are going to run out of money and die very soon. Because the truth of the matter is that we've got these behemoth, like monster companies, the Amazons of the world, the Googles of the world, the OpenAIs of the world, and they're well-funded and they've got the best and brightest research centers and people that are really truly understanding how to build these models, how to test these models, how to ingest data and clean the data and do all this stuff. So if you're going to start an AI company, you have to understand, like, that's not where you're going to find your blue ocean, right? Because these foundation models, and I'm just using that as one area of expertise, there's lots and lots of those out there. So I think what I'm looking at as a business owner and as someone who works with, you know, I work with Fortune 500 companies. I work with venture-backed startups. I'm helping them all navigate this AI thing, right? Because if you're sitting on mass amounts of information, you can leverage that in better different ways, whether it's through generative content creation, whether it's through customer service automation, whether it's through like removing human dependency in certain areas. There's lots of opportunities to scale revenue, scale profit, but most importantly, scale the happiness factor of your teams, right? No one's talking about that, because the reality is AI is not coming for your job, but someone using AI is. Period, facts. Like, somebody else has said that way smarter than me. So I'm looking at how can I use these tools to augment me, to speed me up, to be a thought partner. And I'm using it in so many different ways in my companies. And I'm happy to go through all those, but just, I don't want to give you a monologue without giving you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah. So it's really interesting, as you said there, where I think it's knowing your own limitations too, right? Of knowing you're not going to start an AI company necessarily be the best AI company, where I see it a lot of the time, people I'm talking to, of I get their pitch decks in and it's, well, we're an AI company, as you said. And then it's like, we're using ChatGPT-4. It's like, you're not an AI company. You're using AI and using open source AI as well, which is like, that's not a competitive advantage, right? If you've got some way to have exclusive data.
Well, if you're using open AI, you're not even using open source, right? Because at that point, you're using a black box. And if they change their pricing model tomorrow, or they lock something down or whatever, like, there's so many second order consequences to like building an entire business in somebody else's business, that's a whole separate interview in itself, right?
Yeah, I've always called it like parasitic businesses, right? Where it's dependent on the other company. Like, for example, with like Facebook, right? If you put a Facebook plugin, if Facebook changes fundamentally the way they work, you don't have a company anymore. And it happens with a lot of people, for example, with Shopify, with WordPress, and those companies tend to try to make it fairly stable, right? So that if there's an update, then you can update your app or your plugin to do it.
Yeah. Well, what I say, Amir, like what I would say, Amir, is like here on this topic is like, are you building barnacles or are you building boats? Because like, so I like your parasitic kind of conference, but like for me, like if you're building a barnacle, you're sort of attaching yourself to somebody else's journey and destiny, and wherever they go, you're beholden to. If you're building a boat, whether it's a speedboat or an ocean liner or whatever metaphor we want to use here, it gives you a lot more control over it. So for example, you could build an entire business that's built on GPT-4, right? Many people are doing that right now. But what you have to understand is, what's the problem you solve for the customer? That's what they're buying, right? You're not selling, contact form automation. What you might be selling is convenience or more revenues in the sales cycle if you're building a CRM tool that uses GPT-4, right? So I think right now, finding product market fit is going to be determined by those that solve a real problem and that understand that the problem they're solving is more important than how they're solving the problem, because this stuff's going to get faster, better, cheaper. You know, now we're talking about a world where I believe in the future, we're going to have models for everything, whether it's micro models, foundational models, you know, local models that are on the cloud, if we're talking about Internet of Things or physical computing devices and that sort of thing. So I'm really excited where this stuff is going. What it's also helping me realize is the importance of thought leadership. And what I mean by that specifically is the power of a large language model is if you train it with the right data, you can amplify and scale that data in unique ways. So a really common use case that I see is like there's this concept of a vector database, which is basically just like a very fancy way to store information. So if you're a company that's got lots of intellectual property, right? I'm working with a fintech company right now and working with them to figure out how do we store all of their knowledge in a vector database and then make that knowledge be able to be retrieved by a series of applications and appliances. So now what does that mean for you? Well, that means that you can get almost instant customer service only trained on your data. So unlike the hallucinations that a lot of these LLMs provide, where if you ask ChatGPT to like, you know, tell me the top 10 quotes that Abraham Lincoln said, like it's going to get a lot of them wrong. It's going to make weird shit up, right? That's called hallucinating because of there's some limitations for how these things are built. You know, they're which I'll go off into a whole nother tangent on. But at a high level, what I'm getting at is if you have unique thought leadership, whether it's a proprietary process or proprietary information that you have that you're able to lock down, and I think privacy is important because OpenAI has a lot of data in their system that they didn't rightfully obtain. And that's why I think the New York Times is trying to sue them and shut them down. But I think in all seriousness, if you've got all your data, if you've got 50 years of a company's data in a vector database, now you have a customer service agent that is better than any other customer service agent on the planet at finding information, and it becomes a sidekick. So now it's not about replacing me as the customer service agent. It's about allowing me to serve people in a more meaningful way. So let these AIs go and fetch all this information for me. Let me spend the time building relationships. What can't a machine do yet, right? Empathy. What can't a machine do yet? Relating to you on an emotional level, right? So now I can do more wow moments for you, more surprise and delight, because these AIs are doing all this other stuff, right? So the thing I like to think about is any ritualistic task that you do in a business or in your life that's repetitive, most of them, if they're digital specifically, they can be repeated. Obviously, I can't have my teeth get brushed for me, or I can't have, you know, shower for me, but I can have it go through and like, which is one of the things I do is, let's look at my calendar for the week. Let's see all the people I met with. Let's automatically update my CRM based on everybody I met with this week. Very simple integration, right? I built that in a couple hours with Zapier, GPT-4, and Google Calendar, right? Like I could go and build that as an app, and I might. But right now I'm using Notion for my CRM, very basic. I'm using, you know, and yeah, could I have used HubSpot or Salesforce or one of these? Absolutely. But this is my personal CRM, right? This is like, hey, who are my friends I haven't caught up with in a while? You know, that to me is the thing that gets me excited is like, how do I automate away all the things in my life that I don't want to do? I don't want to go through and do that. I don't want my assistant to go through and do that, right? I want people to do fun, interesting tasks because as humans, the era of knowledge workers has been upon us for a long time. I don't know of anybody that enjoys getting up at 7 a.m, going to a factory and working at a factory from 8 to 5. I don't, right? Like my uncle works in a factory and he doesn't love his job. I have friends that have worked in these types of things. No one wants to feel like a cog in a wheel. So if that's an area where the digital factories that we live in can just be automated with these tools, automate them, right? Leave space for creativity. Leave space for the magic. That's what I think companies need to think about. It's not about shaving down your workforce to 10 people and having robots replace people. I think it's more about how do we create happier, healthier workforces that leverage people's competitive advantage, which is creativity. And that's why I say thought leadership's important.
I think you brought up an interesting point there as well about like assistants, right? Because nowadays we can outsource a lot of the tasks to assistants abroad, and it's relatively cheap, right? So you might think, somebody listening might think, okay, what's the point in me automating this through AI if I could just get my assistant to do it and it's only going to cost me X amount per month, right? What have been some of the tasks which have been borderline for you where you're not sure, okay, should I automate this or should I have my assistant do it? And what made you decide either to keep it with your assistant or to give it to AI? You said about the creativity aspect, but there's always going to be some close to that line, and which were some of the ones where you maybe were struggling with a bit, and what made you decide to go that way?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I can tell you the wrong answer to the question because that's the one that I started with. The wrong answer to the question is automate everything you can because that assumes that you are not placing a premium on engineering time and systems design time. So when that was the case, I'm like, let me automate all these things for my assistant so they don't have to do them. And what I realized is when I added up the actual cost of my assistant and I added up the cost of my time, I'm like, wow, my time is worth hundreds of dollars an hour. My assistant's time is worth not a lot of money per hour. So it's not that I'm more important than an assistant, just how do I create more leverage, right? As entrepreneurs, our job is to create leverage. Leverage is not doing it all yourself. So what I probably should have done is said, okay, I really want to automate these things. Let me pay someone to automate them for me. And then my assistant can do the rest. That would have been a better way. But I think in some cases, what I'm doing now, this is a relatively new experience, asking myself the question of like, what should I automate? What can I automate? And then what will I automate? So what I've basically done when I went through that heuristic and I figured that out is a lot of tasks now that I could automate if I wanted to like spend the time stitching tools together or writing some software myself because I have a coding background. I realized that that's just my ego talking. That's just me being like, oh, I can do this, right? Versus being like, hey, assistant, can you go and I'm just saying assistant because many of us have assistants. Obviously, I have different people that do different things in my organization. But in a simple level, it's like, okay, when this thing happens, do this thing. And then here's a playbook to do it. Like what I realized is like, in some cases, if you're trying to automate everything, it's just because you're a bad delegator. And I was a pretty bad delegator and I'm getting better at it. But that made me realize that like, you know what, just because you can automate something doesn't mean that you should. And what I realized is now, like, I think it's a really bad idea to automate content generation. I think it's great to create content and go back and forth. But in a world where we're all using the same four foundational models with a little bit of fine tuning, there's going to be just that much more crap coming out, right? So what I always tell people is like, if you really want to master generative AI, it's a couple of things, right? Level one is get really good at prompt engineering, right? Level two is fine tune on some of your own data or some proprietary data that really just gives it a much better thing. Level three is if you've got your own models or maybe a vector database or something. And then level four, in some cases, I think is that's where you're going and building something completely transformational. But I don't think a lot of businesses right now need to go to level four. I think a lot of businesses can start at level one and just sort of work their way up that ladder. So that's been something that's been helping me is realizing like, if it's a repetitive task that has a high margin of error, I would say automate it. If it has a low margin of error and it's inexpensive to do and there's not a like incredulous volume of it, then I'd say just have a virtual assistant, you know, offshore, take care of it. In some cases, what you would have to compensate them is going to be really good compensation for them, but really not expensive for you. And then over time, if it scales, then automate it, right? But you have to, but what's more expensive, a virtual assistant or a high paid engineer? So in some cases, I think you have to just figure out what your time's worth. But I've automated a ton of stuff. I've automated follow-ups, reminders, calendar stuff, things with my project management with my different companies. Idea generation, I've done a lot of automation on process automation, you know, CRM, sales stuff, marketing stuff, finance stuff. So finance, there's so many opportunities for automation, which is great in terms of like reconciliation, you know, expense management, all those kinds of things. So I think that in many cases, we're living in a world that is much more of a world where it's people and machines working together in a kind of sparring match or a co-creation. And that's where I think that like now that we're headed towards like this world of, you know, intelligent agents or automated agents or AI agents, that's where I think that things are going to get really good. As an example, I have a really simple app that I built that just has a bunch of instructions that I've built out. Think of it like a really long set of prompts. I'm simplifying it for the audience here. And I can just run this in my terminal and it's got a bunch of different things I can do. And it's got my favorite setup, that sort of thing. So I'm able to spin up these agents, like, you know, the ones that people have heard of is like AutoGPT or Baby AGI. There's lots of them out there. So I'll just use ones people have heard of, but that's where it gets interesting, where you, if you can think smart enough as to how you want something to work, almost anything's automatable. But like, I'm not going to automate booking my travel because there's a lot of nuanced complexity to it, right? Like, rather than having my assistant go and find flights and source flights and then pick things and call me back, it takes less time for me to just go on because I know what I want and just do it. That's worth the 5 minutes. If I was doing it every day and it was taking up 20 minutes a day, then I'm going to fully automate it.
And I think a lot of what we've talked about so far is about automating or making tasks that you're already doing easier. Obviously, one of the other things about AI is doing things that before weren't even possible, or before you wanted to do it, but you knew you never had time for it, or that's going to take too much effort, or like you said, oh, I'm going to have to hire people. Whereas now those things which were beyond what you think you'd be able to do are now possible. And what are some of those things that you're using AI for there, where actually you're expanding beyond what you were doing before, as opposed to making the things you're already doing easier?
100%. So research, data sanitization, so cleaning data, reformatting data, connecting different systems together. I'll give you a perfect example. The other day, I was able to research a large amount of clients' customer reviews, understand the sentiment, topics, and most popular questions, and then have all the questions generated, all the answers generated, and published into content on their website, which will now rank on SEO, and also saved probably 100 hours worth of their product management team's time typing that stuff up. I did all of that and then managed to convert the output into JSON files that I was then able to feed into a vector database. So now it can be used in a chatbot. And I did all of that work, which would normally cost a client probably $100,000 in a few weeks to do. And then you add in back and forth decision-making. So now this project is a 2-month project. It's $100,000. I did that in 2 days. And the funny part about it is, of the, it's called 2 days, 16 hours, right? Of the 16 hours of labor, this is the funny part. About 14 of the 16 hours was just getting the client to agree on what they're going to do. The actual task itself took 2 hours to do. And yes, you might be hearing that going, okay, show me how to do it. And it's like, sure, reach out to me and I'll show you. It's like topic analysis, conversion, generating content, repurposing content, and then generating new content in a set of steps, and then converting that to the right format based on a spec sheet. Like, these things were not possible 18 months ago. Like, that to me is so freaking cool that we're living in this world where all of that's possible, right? Like, it just blows my mind, even saying it, right? While I was doing it, you know, or the other day, my sink was leaking at my house, right? Underneath my thing. And I'm very not handy when it comes to everything non-computer. And I took a picture of it and I uploaded it to ChatGPT and I gave it a prompt and it told me exactly what to look for and exactly what the problem was and how to fix it. Now, could I have gone on YouTube and searched for popular leaks and like clicked on a bunch of videos? And I probably could have found a video if I asked the right question, but I took a photo and it told me exactly how to fix it and it worked. You know, by the way, that technology, that like massively multi-billion dollar technology that I just described to you, I pay $19 a month for it. I spend $5 on a Starbucks, on one cup of Starbucks. I spent $19 to have access to that technology. So we are democratizing the ability to make every single person a team of 10 if we are smart about how we're using these tools.
What are some of the things that you're going to use AI for in the future that you haven't yet done or that you're really excited about? And maybe, let's say a year down the line or 2 years down the line, that you're thinking that's what the next phase is going to be. That's going to be the next big thing I want to change.
I think scaling unscalable things is what I'm going to be continuing to do. You know, happy to give you a demo on one of the tools I recently built that offline, not on this podcast, but happy to give you a demo of a tool I built recently that it's saving my company like $25,000 a month. And it cost me a few thousand dollars total in R&D to build it. And it's literally saving me, you know, 2+ people and tools. Like, and that's what's possible today. So like, and I would say like, I consider myself to be a novice on these topics. I have friends of mine that are like, you know, generating full-on videos from a text conversation and like automatically picking clips for their podcast and like doing like, I can do this, some of those things, but like just what's possible at the level. Like if you talk to some people that are doing this stuff that are in the research labs, oof, it's crazy. But in summation, what I would say is that if you're not using AI, you're already behind, but it's not too late. And whether you like it or not, this world is going to be driven by AI assisted or AI replaced technologies. And the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to get started now when it's still kind of the wild, wild west and everybody's figuring it out? Or do you want to try to get started in a couple of years from now when the entire world has changed, when the way we use software has changed, when the way we build things has changed? The time is now, and it's not hard to learn this stuff right now because it's super approachable. One of the reasons why ChatGPT was one of the fastest growing products in global history is because they took very, very simple concepts. We all know what it feels like to look on a text message, right? Most of the world population knows how to text, right? We all know what Google looks or feels like. They took a very simple modality of a text message style conversation, and they gave us the ability to do that. Now, you might be saying, well, we've had chatbots for a while. For years we've had those. But what I think they did really well is they refined the pre-trained experience with the pre-trained transformers and the ability to have the knowledge engine, the reasoning engine, and they made it really useful, right? It wasn't like, hey, so what's your name? And it's like, my name is whatever. It's like, no, I'm going out and saying like, okay, my favorite book is, you know, The Four Agreements. Based on the book, The Four Agreements, what are the four agreements and what are the 10 things I can do to make sure that I'm following the four agreements? And then, oh, by the way, when you tell me that answer, I want you to argue for and against each of those points using, you know, ancient philosophy as a construct. And you can do that now, right? Like from like, it's just crazy to me that that's all possible. So for the audience that might be listening going like, that all sounds like a lot. It's like, we can all go on ChatGPT for free right now. We can all get a free trial of Zapier right now. We can all follow a couple of tutorials, whether those video-based tutorials or text-based tutorials, and just start tinkering because the bar is low right now and it's the wild, wild west. And what you're going to be able to do in 6 weeks or 6 months from now is going to be 100x cooler than what we're talking about in this call right now.
Yeah. So thanks so much for coming on today, Pete. If people want to find out more about you, what you're up to, keep track of you, where should they go to?
So I would say if you want to keep track of the craziness that's my brain, definitely grab my newsletter. I write a free newsletter. I put it out twice a month called The Ford Obsessed Founder. You can get it at petesenna.com. There's a blue button for subscribe on the top. It's free. It's just my thoughts and musings that are coming across. I share links to the stuff I'm talking about on the call today, how-tos, tutorials, that sort of thing. And really what that newsletter is all about is just helping people live more creative, curious lives. And if you're a founder or a business leader, you get a lot of value from it.
And is there anything that people listening right now might be able to help you with? Is there anything you're looking for help with?
That's a good question. I'm really bad at asking for help. I love when people share challenges or problems that they're facing in their business with me, because it lets me think about additional use cases for how I can shift my mindset. I love when problems find me, because then I can think of solutions to solve them using some of these technologies. So that's really what I would say is like, share some of your problems with me. That would really be the only ask I have right now. And, you know, outside of that, just, you know, my other ask would be just having people keep tuning into you because you're putting great stuff out in the world.
Thank you. Well, thanks so much for coming on today. Any final words?
No, just gratitude. Excited to be here.